We're going to do a thought tonight on false pride, and I'm nervous that it won't be good enough. That was a joke, because that's what we're going to talk about. For those listening on the podcast, you may not know, but on the site Experience the Big Book, I put out, if you go to episodes and you go to push Saturday and you scroll down from, you'll go down in year five, if you go from 96 to 1, all the big books in order. And if you go on Wednesday night, you'll see we're on number 76, and you go down to 1, and that's the big book up to step 7. I think I talked too much on Wednesdays lately. And then if you go on the site, you can, down on that episode page, down the tags, you can find tags for steps, whatever you want, and they'll all come up. There are 420 podcasts. The ones that I'm doing now live, since we started back, are in year 6 on Saturdays. And tonight I thought I would do a thought number 4, false pride. I've gotten a lot of comments on the site about this. A lot of people have looked at this thought and said it was very helpful to them. I was going to do 3 thoughts, but then after I did my notes on this and covered 2 pages, I said, well, maybe we'll just do 1. Mark's laughing because he told me I'd only do 1 thought. And the other thing on the site, too, if you're interested, if you're listening to podcasts, I have thoughts, 77 thoughts on recovery. And recently at the meetings, we did a review of the 12 steps and looked at recovery from alcoholism, and I put out one of those, and I'll be putting out the next couple. We did a series of 3, and I think you might find it helpful. I wrote this on July 4th of 2017. That's when we started the site, and someone suggested I write some thoughts. The idea for recording the site came in 2016, but nobody knew how to do it. I started the meeting in 2008, so there were, 1,200 meetings that we did before we got to this. And then when Lau came, he showed me how I could record on my phone. But I want you to know, it took me 6 months to realize I could buy a microphone so I wouldn't have to hear the pages turning when I did it. So I'm not that smart. And then, one person complained, which we're going to get to, and then I had to get the microphone, and it's been good. And I saw Chris, who put the site together the other day, and he actually put the website together, and he came about 6 years ago, and he was a web designer. And so that's how it worked out. This thought really summarizes my whole life. False pride. I wrote the root of my troubles for me. And bear with me, because my wife made the lines more room so I could write, and I wrote so much. In fact, I had a appointment today at 11:40, and I started writing at 11. I looked at my watch, and it was 11:45. And so I really got a lot out of this. I hope you will as well. False pride. I wrote, Clancy I, in one of his talks, stated that false pride is a killer for alcoholics. And Clancy, I think he recently died. He was from Los Angeles. And when I first sobered up, I listened to a lot of his talks. A really powerful speaker. And he was in Lawrence about 8 or 9 or 10 years ago, and we went, a bunch of us, and I heard him talk. And false pride is a killer. How does it kill me? And he defined false pride as a compensation for feeling less than. Now, I don't know about you, but when I heard that, it just hit me. I compensated for feeling less than. That was the whole story of my life. So how does it kill me? It kills me because it produces fear all the time, because I have excessive pride because I'm feeling less than. And so I have low self-esteem, and to protect myself, I have excessive pride. And so I'm constantly in fear and then I get angry. Anybody ever do that? And then we drink, right? And then I would take actions that harmed me and others. Now, I didn't know that that was my problem when I came here, but I see it now. This has defined my life. It's a false sense of self. It's I've become Michael the Magnificent. Was anybody else? I'm looking at some magnificent human beings right here. Michael the Magnificent. I was not the Michael God created, but the one I created to protect me because I didn't feel that I was good enough. So I compensated by having excessive pride. And I was absorbed with me and how I was treated. Anybody relate to that? Respected, obeyed, etc. And I had to compensate and make up for being less than by being better in my own mind than other people. And so I wasn't worthy. I wasn't good enough. I was constantly seeking approval and seeking love. And I sought it in the wrong places. Isn't that a song? See, I sought love from other people's approval rather than from God. And so, and it says, from early childhood, I was constantly seeking approval through my actions or achievements. And when I did that, I made the world my higher power. Can you relate to that? I mean, what people thought of me, I made that. I worshipped other things. It says on page 55, I blocked out the fundamental idea of God by worshipping other things. What people thought of me, how I looked, how I appeared, was I good enough? And so fear was a constant part of my life, but I didn't even realize that it was just the way I was, this uneasiness, you know. I separated into my world where I played God. And I didn't realize that it wasn't the real world where God was. It was in my head. And I lived in this world where I ran the show. And I wrote, just being Michael wasn't good enough. I never felt really okay. And why wasn't being Michael good enough? My mother was always comparing me to other people, other kids. And so I was constantly seeking her approval, and then that became approval of others. And I don't blame my mother. She was, I've done my four steps. She was a great mother. She was doing the best she can. She was very insecure, and she didn't feel good enough. So then she sought approval from others, and she wanted me to be great so she would look good. You get it? And so it's, and I never quite felt okay. And I always wanted to be a better student or a better athlete or better looking or cooler or whatever I wanted, you know, so people would tell me I was okay. And so when you have false pride, you need other people to tell you whether you're okay and not yourself and God. I don't know, does this make any sense? Am I the only one who's ever felt this way? And it resulted in my lifelong pursuit of success. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read Bill's story, the first two pages, it was like, how did this guy know what my life was like? And he wrote this, and he said, 22 and a veteran of foreign wars, I went home at last. I fancied myself a leader. For had not the men on my battery given me a special token of appreciation, my talent for leadership, I imagine, this is all in his head, would place me at the head of vast enterprises which I would manage with the utmost assurance. So the vision for Bill to give him self-esteem, to make him feel okay, was that he was going to be this great leader and manager of these vast enterprises. And then in case you misunderstood what he was saying, on the next page, he says, I took a night law course and obtained employment as investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Now, every alcoholic I've ever worked with had false pride. Every alcoholic I've ever worked with sought approval their whole lives through the outside world. And what was success? Success was what I thought I needed to do to get approval. And I also thought, I see it now, but I think when people come to AA, if you ask them, they really think that they're on CNN and everybody's watching their life and that they're so important that everybody's seeing everything that they do. And wow, look, they're all watching me and I did this wrong and oh my. And I don't know about you, but sometimes that's the way I think it looked. And so my success was be whatever I needed to feel that I was okay, I was good enough. And I would get approval from others. And when you do that, it says on page 62 that I was driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. See, I was driven by all this. I stepped on the toes of my fellows and they retaliated against me. And I invariably found that at some time in the past I made decisions based on self, on getting approval, on being good enough, which later put me in a position to be hurt. And I could see it in relationships. I could see it throughout my whole life. And I was under this delusion, it states in the big book, that I could wrest satisfaction, happiness by managing well. Now, delusion is a belief contrary to reality. But I thought it was true, and nobody told me it was wrong, that I could wrest satisfaction, happiness by managing well. And what would make me satisfied? Well, it constantly changed. Right? Think about it. And happiness depends on how I see things. Happiness depends on circumstances and how I see them. So I could never get things ordered perfectly right so that everything was okay all the time. I would have brief periods of where I was okay, and then I would worry about something that I should be worrying about. What am I not worrying about? I don't know if that makes sense. But when I live like that, I can never get enough of things to recognition to satisfy my ego. And remember what Chuck C. says, the human ego is never satisfied. And if I could just get things lined up, everything would be okay. If I could just get this achievement, or this house, or this woman. I don't know about you, but I ended a lot of really relationships with some really nice, wonderful women to get the better looking woman who was a complete monster. Anybody relate to that? Yeah, and so I made a lot of bad decisions in my younger days, and it was just to satisfy how I thought people would see me. And I wrote there were brief moments of triumph. That's when you get your way, right? You have a good day, everything goes great, right? And I got what I want. And peace, but they would never last. And the thing about the big book, it says fear would always set in. Anybody do that? You're sitting in your chair, you're okay, and then all of a sudden you think of something. And it's... I remember sitting, I was at an NCAA basketball championship game, and I was watching it. I was there. And then I started worrying about something that it was completely unrelated. Why did I do that? I was afraid that something was going to happen that wasn't related. I couldn't enjoy the moment. I remember that. I said, well, that's so stupid. It's not happening right now. And so that was 20 years ago or so. And it said, fear would set in. And then if you look at page 68, I don't know about you, but this made a lot of sense to me. It said, notice the word fear is bracketed with all the examples he puts in the book. This touched about every aspect of our lives. Now, how did my false pride trigger fear? Well, we're going to look at that, but I was always feeling threatened. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence was shot through with it. So when I looked at the tapestry of my life, when I came in and I did my fourth step, and I could see it now. When I got fear, it would put these evil and corroding threads through what would have been a beautiful tapestry. And Fred, I don't know if anybody remembers Fred on page 41, he had the perfect day. Everything was perfect. He went to Washington, he did the business deal, and everything went great. And it said, I was pleased. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Now, this is one of the great warnings in the big book. A perfect day will protect you from alcoholism. So he crossed the threshold of the dining room, and the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple cocktails with dinner. Now, two paragraphs before, he was admitted to the asylum for the fifth or sixth time, you know, for drinking. And it just shows you how it can just, a perfect day won't even treat that, because it's never perfect enough. And so I wrote here, someone came up to me, this is true, after a meeting, and I can't remember what it was, and they asked me how I could have any problems since I was a successful doctor. So I laughed. I replied, being a physician was not enough to make me feel okay. You see, that was my life's pursuit, that I would become a doctor, and then everybody in the family would think how great I was. And they were happy, but it wasn't enough. And then I had to go from there. My mother would always tell me, she had this expression in Baltimore when you were in the neighborhood we were in, that you could be the top guy. You know, he was the top guy, the top doctor. And I remember seeing her, she's 84 years old. Give me a break, Mom. And she says, you know, Michael, if you hadn't married that woman and you'd stayed in Baltimore, you could have been the top guy. And I was 50-some years old. I said, you know, it just wasn't enough. She didn't really care what I was like now. You get it? It was all her deal. But it was, I mean, she was fine. But it wasn't enough. And I remember I had to get the best residency. And my friends in Maryland Medical School were really smart. And they would sit and we would talk about which person went to this really prestigious residency, and they were considered the really, you know, they were great, you know. They didn't stay in Baltimore and just, they went to the top place. And so I had this vision that I would go to one of these places and that people would be sitting around and they would be talking about, but you know what, nobody gave a shit. And I still remember, I'm in University of Chicago, starting my car at 11 o'clock at night, so it'll run the next day when I got out. And I said, you know, nobody really cares that I'm here. I got good training and all, but I don't know if that made any sense. We did these things. They were good things that I did, but they were to fulfill some inner need because of my separation from God. And I could never feel okay separated from God. I had very low self-esteem. And because of that, I had this excessive sense of self-worth. And then I was constantly being threatened. And then even as a doctor, I had to be the busiest doctor. You know, I used to drive the nurses crazy if there was an opening on the schedule, because I thought everybody could see he has an opening on the schedule. I'm a loser. How can you be a decent human being and have an opening? Or I didn't get a new patient. That was always the thing. They would even put names in there just to make me happy. And in fact, they stopped showing me the schedule. I'm being facetious, but I had some serious issues. And I remember one day I didn't have a new patient. They said, "Now, doctor, we don't want to hear it." I said, "Fine." And then at 3:40, I had like three or four new patients to work in and this and that. They said, "Aren't you glad we didn't have a new patient today, doctor?" But you see, my sense of not being good enough never went away completely. And it was real, and I could feel it. But it got less and less the longer I was in the program. It got less and less. And in fact, it got to the point where I was glad when I had openings, because I didn't see it, that it was a sense of my self-worth. And the other thing you do when you have your false pride, your pride, is you're always watching to see who doesn't think well of you. You understand? You know how that is? You could tell this one doesn't like me. So then, since we have false pride, that threatens us. So we hate them. Right, we don't get just, you know, bothered. We have to dislike that person, and we don't even know that they don't like us. I'm sure if you've been in AA, those listening to podcasts, you've been in a meeting where you've seen somebody that you know doesn't like you, and then you immediately decide you're not going to like them. And we just read that we look at the speck in their eye, well, we got a plank in ours. And I always were watching signs of disapproval or seeing if people weren't didn't like me, and I couldn't even tell, but I had a sense, you know. I was very keen when I was in my alcoholism. So when I wrote, "When you're dominated by false pride, fear is a constant companion," and I had fear of disapproval or not getting what I thought I needed to be a success. And who decided when I needed to be a success? I did, and I decided what I needed to feel okay. And then I was constantly watching, and then I would get resentment whenever I was threatened. And remember in the book it says you're in conflict with everybody and everything? Because you're constantly seeing the world through the wrong pair of glasses. See, that new pair of glasses is the pair of glasses where I don't have to see the world through this sense of false pride. I could see it through the way God sees it. People are who they are. I don't have to have people's approval to be okay. But I didn't know that when I came in here, but I've learned that through working the steps. And does anybody else remember how you're constantly watching how you're being treated on the highway or in the grocery store or at the gas station or in AA or at home or anywhere you go? You know, it's there all the time. And sometimes it's not so obvious, but I set the ball rolling. See, because I the script would always change, and they didn't know what the script was. And so I wrote that when I was threatened, I would get angry and resentful. Now, where does it say that in the big book? It says that on page 64. See, a life run on self-will can never work. Anybody agree with that? Because when you live a life run on self-will and you're running the show and you're an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, this is what we're talking about, then you're constantly threatened. So it says on page 64, whenever somebody bothered us or we were angry, it says, what was threatened? There's always fear because they're threatening my instincts of life, my social instinct, my material instinct, or my sex instinct. And if anybody threatens any of those areas of my life, I get angry. And we talked about that. We have that handout where it shows the three instincts of life and then self at the center. And then it has the arrows to the wrongs, the manifestation of self. We get wrong judgment, which is resentment, wrong belief, which is fear. And we get wrong actions and we harm others. And that's because we're running the world. And because of my false sense of self and my low self-esteem, my excessive pride, I'm threatened all the time. And so, if I felt less than someone, anybody do that? I would compensate by judging them. And who told me I was less than them? I did. Instead of saying, "Gee, that's a great guy. He's really good. He's really smart. He's really doing a great job," I would feel inferior. So I would judge them in a negative way, because it threatened me. And I also became a people pleaser. Anybody do that? And I wanted approval of people I didn't even like. In fact, people that I didn't even think were nice people, I would want them to like me. And it was really sick behavior. And I don't have to do that anymore. If you don't like me, have a party. You know, there you go. And I lived my life 299 to 1. Mark was talking about that. You see, I'm worried that one person in this meeting doesn't like it. So, and don't tell me, because I'm not that well yet. And then you forget the 299, and that would happen all the time. This guy, Ed Mutin, you can hear his talk on XA Speakers. He made the point that 299 people could tell him how great he was, but if one did not, he would focus on the one, forget the 299. I lived my whole life like that. I used to do it when I first started the meetings. Somebody's leaving early. Well, it must not be any good. He left early. It must be terrible. I'm a loser. Now, I'm still talking during the meeting while I'm thinking all this, because we're good at this, right? But, you know, I told my wife that, and she says, you know, maybe they had an emergency. Here's what else she said. It's really hard to take sometimes. She says, maybe it wasn't about you. You get it? Yeah, well, that's... But you see how we are. It's all about us. It's always about us. We always see the world through our glasses. And you know, who looked at me wrong, who didn't approve, criticized me. If I had a patient who went for another opinion, oh my, I used to stew about it. You know, oh, they went for another opinion, oh, I'm no good. And the nurses would say, well, doctor, you know, you've got plenty to do. The schedule's full, and you've got five people waiting, doctor. So, but it would affect me. I couldn't help it. And that's my alcoholism. That's my false pride. And I'm laughing now, but I see how sad it was that I had to live my life that way for so long. Because I was really okay. And then I had somebody tell me, which I didn't listen. When I first started practicing 40 years ago, they said, now listen, if somebody leaves you and they want to go somewhere else for an opinion, get down on your knees and say, thank you, Jesus. Because it's usually you're not going to make them happy. And then if you get somebody who comes to you who they didn't like the other doctor, you're supposed to say, why me, Jesus? You get it? Because it's not about us. And so I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to live that way anymore. But I could see it, in summer camp, in kindergarten, and all through my life. And I wrote here, I, of course, would like to be felt well of, as all of us do, but I don't have to be dependent on others anymore to be okay. I think that's one of the great freedoms of the program. And it says on page 98, and this is really something I talk to about a lot. It says, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence on God. That's what it's all about. See, when I have this false sense of self, I'm depending on me. And I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to play God. I don't have to rely on me. God's in charge. Do his will. Play the role he assigns. It says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. And so I wrote that I have no control of what people think of me. Isn't that something? I really don't. And it's none of my business. I only have control of how I react and treat others. And what I've learned is how I react depends on my spiritual condition. If I'm in fit spiritual condition, I don't have false pride. If I'm back in self, then my false pride comes out. So that's how I can tell. How am I reacting to a situation is whether I'm back in self and my false pride is being activated, or I'm with God in fit spiritual condition. It's not hard to tell. And when you get used to it. And I wrote, it's my job each day to do God's business and God's business to take care of me. And that's from Chuck C. And how do I do God's business? I stay close to him and do his work well. I carry a vision of God's will in all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. And my self-esteem is not dependent on things or what people think of me or how I act. It doesn't depend on what kind of house I have or how much money I have or anything at all anymore. It depends on my relationship with God. And Judge Jan passed away last year. And he was a good buddy. And in this room, he gave me this thing that we build self-esteem through esteemable acts. And when I heard that, it really made a sense. So what are esteemable acts? It's when I'm carrying out God's will. It's on page 77, what's my real purpose? Is to fit myself maximally, spiritually, to be serve God and others. Who am I serving today? Is it me or is it God? And am I practicing, whose character am I practicing? Is it mine or is it God's? And am I being LPTKCC? Am I being God's character in all situations? And I only feel okay today. I tell my wife all the time, I'm feeling good today. She says, great. She knows what I mean. I feel connected with God. I'm not back in self. And I feel that way most of the time. And so I still have to watch for false pride, not feeling good enough. It never goes away. It's part of our personality. But with God's help, I can ask him to change the way I see every situation. And I can practice with his help, love and tolerance. Now, love to me is agape love. I have to love everybody. It doesn't matter what they're like. And tolerance is, to me, having this plate glass, this thick plate glass between whatever they do and it bothering me. And the more I'm fit, the more I can tolerate intolerable human beings. And the more I can love unlovable human beings. It doesn't depend on them anymore. And I feel better when I'm being loving and tolerant. I feel better. And on page 100 is one of the great promises, and then I'll end with that. God, I took 32 minutes. I didn't think I'd have enough to do here. I hope it's been helpful. Don't tell me if it isn't. Page 100, remind the prospect, the bottom of page 99, that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. And then it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. And if I persist, remarkable things will happen. When I look back, I realize the things that came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Isn't that true? And Jim, that's what I was talking about. When I look back, but here's the deal. If I'm following the dictates of a higher power, if I'm serving God, if I'm connected to him, if I'm playing the role he assigns, I will presently live in a new and wonderful world, and it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. I'm not dependent on circumstances to feel okay anymore. So I can feel okay just by following the dictates of God, staying close to him, doing his work well. It's not dependent on out there. So what they talk about, AA is an inside job. I live my whole life on the outside job. I wanted to make that to feel okay. Now I'm okay when I'm okay in here. So I got a lot out of this, and I hope it was helpful, and I'm going to end there. Thank you, everybody.